The Claude 3 model family by Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. Haiku is lightning fast and cost effective, Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed, and Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Learn more at anthropic.com/Claude.
More details emerge on the fatal shooting at a Virginia Walmart. And as protests rocked Iran, hardline government leaders met with moderates, hoping they could ease tensions.
The outreach suggests that they know something needs to be done. So even if there is an escalation of violence, there could be subsequently more outreach coming and potentially some change.
Plus, holiday bakers are scraping social media for bargains on butter. It's Wednesday, November 23rd. I'm Daniela Cheslow for The Wall Street Journal, filling in for Anne-Marie Fertoli. This is the PM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories that move the world today. In Ukraine, authorities say Russia unleashed another barrage of missiles today, hitting critical infrastructure and a maternity ward. In the Kyiv area, strikes killed 4 people and injured more than 30. The mayor of Kyiv said on Telegram that water supplies were suspended in the capital and there was no electricity in some areas. An earlier Russian attack Wednesday hit a maternity ward in the southern region of Zaporizhia, where President Volodymyr Zelensky said an infant died. Meanwhile, Pope Francis today linked Russia's war against Ukraine to Joseph Stalin's terror famine of the 1930s, which he called a genocide. It was the Pope's strongest condemnation of the war to date. In Jerusalem, at least one person is dead and more than 24 injured after 2 explosions near bus stops on the outskirts of the city, according to Israeli authorities. It was the first bombing in Jerusalem since 2016, in what security officials suspect was an organized attack. No group has taken responsibility so far. The explosions come during a period of ongoing conflict between Israeli security forces and Palestinian militants. It's led to one of the bloodiest years in the Israeli-occupied West Bank in more than a decade. Workers at the world's biggest iPhone assembly plant clashed with police after a protest erupted at the Foxconn factory in central China. Videos show workers pulling down tents and a glass entrance to a building smashed. Employees say the protest began after they learned their expected bonuses would be delayed. Foxconn had been offering bonuses to new recruits after tens of thousands of workers were quarantined as part of China's zero COVID policy. But thousands more workers fled for fear of catching the disease. Police in the area declined to comment on the protests. Apple didn't respond to requests for comment. More details are coming in about the deadly shooting at a Walmart store in Chesapeake, Virginia last night. The company and law enforcement say the suspect, Andre Bing, was an overnight manager there and that he killed 6 people before fatally shooting himself. Our breaking news reporter, Alyssa Luckpat, says the attack is part of a string of workplace shootings in recent years.
Last year, there were 2, one in Indianapolis at a FedEx facility involving a former employee, and also one in San Jose, California, at a light rail facility. And then there were also several in the years past, including one not far from Chesapeake, Virginia Beach, where a city employee opened fire in a municipal building and killed 12 people.
A Walmart spokesman says company employees aren't allowed to bring weapons, including firearms, to work. Minutes from the Federal Reserve's last meeting in early November are out, showing most Fed officials thought they should slow down the pace of interest rate increases. That's after they approved a 4th straight rise of 0.75 percentage points at the meeting in November. The Fed's been raising rates at the fastest pace since the early 1980s to fight high inflation. Officials said at the meeting they could make their next rate hike smaller, 0.5 percentage point, when they meet again on December 13th and 14th. U.S. stocks rose after the minutes release. All 3 major indexes ended the day and week with gains. And the Commerce Department says sales of newly built homes rose 7.5% from September to October. It's a reversal from a month before, when new home sales fell 11%. The housing market has slumped this year as the Federal Reserve raises interest rates and mortgage rates climb. Compared to the year before, sales in October were down 5.8%, the eighth straight month of year-over-year declines. Meanwhile, the cost of buying a home keeps going up. The median new home sale price last month was $493,000, up more than 15% from a year ago. Coming up, protests have rolled through Iran for months, and the regime has responded with a heavy hand. So why did Iran's national security chief set up a meeting with moderates? We'll discuss after the break.
The Capital Ideas podcast now has a new monthly edition hosted by Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin. Investment professionals reveal their best mentors, how they find their next great idea, and a few funny stories. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. American Funds Distributors, Inc.
Iran's Ayatollah Ali Khamenei has been trying to tamp down national protests for months. The demonstrations erupted when a 22-year-old Mahsa Amini died in police custody for allegedly violating the public dress code for women. But protesters kept at it, even after security forces killed hundreds and wounded thousands of demonstrators, according to activists. Now, The Wall Street Journal's Benoit Facon reports that Iran's national security chief has tried a new tactic. He's reached out to reformists and moderates, members of influential families who had been pushed out of power, to try to get people to calm down. Benoit is with me now. Hello.
Oh, hello. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Thank you for being here. Benoit, your sources have told you about these conversations between the hardliners in the regime and some of the influential moderate families out of government. Who was in that room and what was the government asking for?
So in that room, you had Ali Shamkhani, the person in charge of national security. And on the other side of the table are people who are close to the Rafsanjani family, very powerful clan in the country, you know, among the founders of the revolution. Another person who is close to the family of the late Ruhollah Khomeini, who is the actual founder of the Islamic system. And a third person that I know of, who is a founder of the intelligence services of the Islamic Republic. So it's like people who used to be in power, people who've been disqualified, marginalized, or even jailed by the regime with someone who is in power. And on one side of the table, the hardliner, and on the other side, people who want to change the system. The hardliners want to find a solution. They want the protest to end. The reformists want change, but they're not ready to give away, you know, their access to protesters in exchange for nothing.
What did the government ask these people to do?
To calm the protesters, to ask the protesters to stop the demonstrations and calm down. The representative of the moderate and reformist faction refused, but they said, well, we do have a solution that we think you should implement, which is sign a nuclear agreement with Western powers, and that would at least ease the tensions. And that was not accepted.
So the deadlock continues.
Exactly.
Tell us more about this meeting. Is this the first time the government reached out to people who it had previously seen as its opponents?
I mean, they all come from the same cradle, right? The cradle being people who were in jail in the 70s at different times in opposition, then sort of helped found the revolution and their descendants. Except some stayed in a very hardline position, you know, maybe from the original stance of the revolution. And others evolved. They wanted the regime to soften. They wanted the regime to open up to the West. And so they were sidelined. They were seen as no longer orthodox enough, no longer towing the line. And now that regime that marginalized them, sometimes even jailed them, asked them for help. There's now an outreach to them to try to find a way to speak to these protesters who are entirely disconnected from the regime.
Let's put this moment into context. What have the protests done to normal life in Iran? And how has the government responded until now?
So effectively, it was initially about the dress code. compulsory wearing of the veil. The issue is this for the government is it snowballed into something else. It's a protest about the existence of the Islamic system itself. The government has had very violent response in at least some part of the country. In Tehran, it's a lot of tear gas, a lot of pellets, some of them very deadly. But in other parts of the country, to the west and the east, it's live bullets.
So here we have a hardline government making an appeal to moderate and reformist figures. What have those moderates and reformers said about the protesters' demands?
They have said that they understand the discontent, you know, generally caveated with, you know, we don't want rioters and et cetera. But really, there's a lot of expressed sympathy for the protesters, but they are two ways to respond from these groups, from these reforming and moderate groups. The first one is to say, yes, this government has too much of a narrow political base, and we need a truly democratic system where the majority elects representatives. The second thing is they say, well, there is an end to the deadlock. It's a referendum. Remember, the Islamic Republic was instituted in 1979 for a referendum, for a popular vote of the people in favor of that system. Why not put it again into a vote and the people will decide? That's kind of an obvious solution. And it's a, again, non-violent way to change the system. For some reason, neither the hardliners nor the protesters are actually calling for that solution.
Wow. You're describing a very brittle moment for the government. What do analysts watching this unfold think about whether protesters are going to succeed and what that even might look like?
For me, there is no external sign of will for change. It's a little bit like an iceberg, right? It's really unmovable. It looks like a rock, you know, unreformable. But at the same time, the outreach suggests that they know something needs to be done. So even if there is an escalation of violence, there could be subsequently more outreach coming and potentially some change.
That was The Wall Street Journal's Benoit Foucault. Benoit, thank you so much.
Sure, you're welcome.
And finally, tomorrow is Thanksgiving in the U.S., and if you're planning on baking a pie or holiday cookies, you're probably going to need plenty of butter. But the combination of baking season and near-record-high butter prices have left holiday bakers with just crumbs. In September, butter inventories were down 18% from a year ago, and America's growing appetite for cheese, which uses a lot of the same milk fat, is just adding to the squeeze. So how do bakers source their butter without spending a fortune? Our Turning Points columnist Claire Ansbury says butter enthusiasts are coming together online to spread the word on deals.
They will look at their weekly circulars, and if they see that butter is coming up for sale, they will post an alert. You know, butter's on sale starting tomorrow. So they will let each other know how long they can store it. And they'll also throw in some other deals, like for eggs and for nuts. People will offer advice on how to make your own butter or, well, why don't you try half butter, half margarine? So nobody's competing. They're not trying to outdo each other. They're just trying to bake.
And once you get your butter, the butter hunters say you should use every last bit of it, including freezing the wrappers and using them to grease your cookie sheet pans. And that's what's news for this Wednesday afternoon. We'll be back on Friday morning, right after Thanksgiving. If you like our show, we'd be thankful if you rated and reviewed us wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Daniela Cheslow for The Wall Street Journal.
The Claude 3 model family by Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. Haiku is lightning fast and cost effective. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed. And Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Learn more at anthropic.com/Claude.